from Akron, Ohio. This is episode 148 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we're doing our 2017 year in review. This is going to be part one. This is going to be a two-parter, you guys.
Do we call this the Tropies or no?
This is the Tropies, where we give out the awards called the Tropies. Because it's kind of like trope, but it's also like a trophy.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I never got that.
Really? Did you just come up with that?
No.
And this sounds like it's scripted, but it's not.
It's not at all.
No, I thought it was like the Emmys, the Tropies. Like...
Yeah, but it's like a trophy. But it's a trophy.
Well, oh. What would the trophy be?
Like it's just lampshade. It's a trope.
It's a trope.
It's a type of fish.
Is a trope a type of fish?
No. I mean, maybe it is. I don't know. There's a lot of fish.
Are you thinking of trout?
Yes.
It's a literal trout.
Yeah, you just get a trout. And then if you win the golden trophy, you get a golden trout that's just been dipped in gold paint. Anywho, my name is Nick and I'm your host. Today I'm joined by
Thumo
and Kyle.
And Sir will be here shortly. 2017, you guys. There's some good movies and TV shows and stuff. Some bad things happened this year.
Oh, yeah.
And we've talked about it.
Yeah, we're going to stay positive this.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys know what we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
If they listen to our show, probably.
Justice League?
Oh, I saw that.
I didn't see that, but it was bad, right?
Was The Mummy this year?
Yeah. The Mummy was this year. Brendan Fraser.
I was going to say, like, I would have been 123% on board if it was like Brendan Fraser.
Same cast as the first. Mm-hmm.
Like he got frozen, like an Encino Man mashup, and Pauly Shore and thaws him, and he keeps fighting mummies. Like,
I would also like to have seen him, speaking of Frozen, as the snowman.
Olaf?
No, the movie The Snowman.
Oh, it's like The Snowman because you said Frozen.
Which I think has a 7%. I so want to see that movie. I want to see it so bad.
If memory serves, the cast isn't bad.
It's Michael Fassbender.
I love Michael
He's
Fassbender.
Like one of our best working actors.
Yeah, I know. Creed?
Yeah.
I ended up seeing that, and I know it caught a lot of flack. I liked it a lot, but I'm also a fanboy of the series.
I didn't see it. But he's great in... Frank, he's got the thing on his head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's by the guy who wrote The Psychopath Test. That guy is
the book.
Yeah, he's cool in so much that he has his hand in like different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like Fassbender a lot. He does he doesn't know how to count to three in German on his fingers.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I just saw him in Alien Covenant.
That was another movie.
That was this year.
That was this
That's
year.
Pretty,
that was Ridley Scott's first of two movies this year.
Mm.
And that guy's 80 years old.
Is he really?
He's 80 years old. He's done two movies this year, and he basically did three because he had to reshoot all of Kevin Spacey's stuff.
Oh, gosh. Gosh. I actually liked Alien Covenant. It's not a perfect movie or anything like that, but you could tell that he's trying to take that genre... into something else, and it's still very much in keeping with like the alien vibe.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of like overwhelming sadness and claustrophobia.
Mm-hmm. Somebody asked him if he would ever do a Star Wars, and he was like, I've never been asked because I'm too dangerous.
Okay. All right, buddy.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. It would also be dangerous to ask me to do it. Mostly because you'd be losing quite a bit of money. So I don't know if that's really the most accurate assessment. Although,
yeah,
I would love to see Ridley Scott's Star Wars.
I think it'd be... I'd like to see his. I'd like to see Terry Gilliam's.
Yeah.
I think Terry Gilliam could do, like, a really, like... Like, he would do, like, the Jawa story. Like he just, like, stuff everywhere and, you know?
He would just attach, like, you know how the X-Wings... Or X-shaped. He just attached cameras to each of the wings, so you'd get like Dutch angles in space.
Flying Dutch angles.
Yeah. Well,
sounds delicious.
Also, this year, Tarantino may be doing a new Star Trek movie. Speaking of weird star something mashups with auteur directors,
that's weird.
I'd see it.
You're scary, Khan. Why? Or no, I'm scared, Khan. Why? Because you're scary. He does that classic thing where it's like. the person just says, it's on, I'm pretty sure it's on his On the Tropes page, but he does the thing where
they just
someone
say the same thing.
Yeah, but it just like emphasizes. Mm. I don't know. Wow.
Look at the big brains on Brett. Brett and I have a big brain. Something like that.
Or does he say, look at the big brains on Brett again?
Is it Brett or is it Brad? Listeners, let us know. I could look it up.
Brad. Brett. I don't know.
I don't remember.
That's all right. It's okay. You guys remember what the name of that burger place is?
Big Kahuna Burger.
It's the Big Kahuna Burger.
Mm.
That's funny that we had it immediately. That's good.
Yeah. If you had to eat a fictional food from like a movie, I think Big Kahuna Burger would be up there for me.
That's up there. The new Hawaiian burger joint.
I think I would probably go with the Jell-O from Snowpiercer, though.
Oh, no. Gray stuff from Beauty and the Beast. It's delicious, so I hear.
The gray stuff?
Try the gray stuff. It's delicious. Mm. Don't believe me, ask the dishes.
Nice.
What else would be good? $5 milkshake from same movie.
That's like how much milkshakes are now. We've reached we've reached the other side.
Singularity.
5 years from now it's gonna be like $5 for a milkshake. That's a steal. You gotta buy two. Man. Alright. 2017, you guys. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Entertainment wise.
I don't know. I'm not a contemporary dude.
You're an old soul.
I'm an old soul.
You got a Ghostbuster shirt on?
I do.
I mean, it's from the reboot, but even that was last year.
That's true. Yeah,
it's not from the reboot.
I'll say entertainment-wise, thumbs up.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, gaming-wise, it was really good. Yeah. I didn't see a single movie in theaters in 2017, but...
I did see
a few movies,
You saw La La Land.
I think that was last year, wasn't it?
But you saw it this year, right?
I think it was the end of last year.
All right, well, you made a liar out of me.
I'm not going to see La La Land. I don't know.
That's all right. You don't need to.
Hey, look who's here. Look who decided to join us.
Hey, buddy.
Sir's here.
Yeah. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Well, thank you.
Haven't seen you guys since last year.
we were just talking about 2017. It's pretty good. Nothing bad happened.
Oh, yeah. It was totally good.
Totally.
What's really bad is I can't get my headphones turned on.
That joke wasn't as funny as I thought it would be.
Nope.
I even said ahead of time, I know Sir's going to be running a little late. I got this joke planned.
Well, you didn't.
What a banger.
You didn't play it straight. You played it as if...
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Sarcastic.
Well, it's because we were just talking about good things in 2017, like video games.
I walk in for the bad shit, basically.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, Destiny 2 is not among the list of good things in video games.
I wasn't a big fan, but I didn't hate it or anything. What's interesting about movies, though, is that people have been posting their favorite movies of 2017, and like so many, the lists are all completely different. Like,
really?
At least the top like few movies are...
I guess I've only seen AJ's, Arlo's, former guest, Arlo's.
He had a really interesting
top five. I haven't posted mine yet, because I... watch something. I'll talk about it later that I wanted to watch before I added it. But there's too many movies that I just like. I won't see until January, February. Some of them not until they come out.
I think that
DVD.
Might also be another thing is that some of the best movies aren't easy to see.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I haven't seen Nightlight's going to get it, but I haven't seen The Disaster Artist yet.
So yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
Wait.
We are actually not.
They're not.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah. Did you used to?
Yeah.
Or you were going to have it?
We were going to get it, and it got scheduled, and people actually ordered tickets in advance. Mm-hmm.
You had to refund them,
and they pulled it from a bunch of theaters. We found.
Yeah, out. I heard that.
And
too,
it's still kind of like we can't figure out. Nobody really knows why. Like,
yeah.
I think. I mean, if I had to make a prediction, I think it maybe underperformed, and they didn't want it to underperform. Wide,
oh
like
really?
Across
so
a
they,
wide
so they can say that it underperformed and didn't show in very many theaters. Because
it seemed like it, people really seemed to like it
critically. Yeah,
when it that first weekend, it just like didn't. The numbers wise didn't seem like
that's too bad.
Yeah.
So what's going up in its place then? Do you know?
At the Nightlight,
We've
pretty much kept Lady Bird for like 4 weeks. Lady Bird's basically
it's the
new Moonlight. Like last year, Moonlight was the movie that we brought in before the Oscar run, so people got a chance to see it early, and
That's
it did like pretty well for us. And then we brought it back because the Oscars played it for 4 weeks, basically.
I'll be talking about Lady Bird a little bit this episode, and by a little bit, I mean way too much. And by this episode, I mean the entire duration of this podcast as we do it. But I watched it again with Nelly, and she was only kind of like lukewarm on it, and it upset me so much. I was like brokenhearted by it. She was like, it was all right. And I'm like, no.
I mean, it's one of those movies where I thought, okay, this is going to be good. It's going to be technically good.
Yeah.
I didn't think it would be, I didn't think it would live up to the hype to the degree that, I mean, the best reviewed movie
did on it?
Rotten Tomatoes. And personally, I mean, I finally like sat in the theater and watched it like last week.
Mm-hmm.
So it barely made this list. Like,
there's a lot of tension right here because I need to know if it lived up to the hype.
Keep drawing it out, dude. Well,
my God. That movie is, I mean, for one, it's like the first older millennial coming of age film. It's by a woman director, which is incredible. And I like somebody else compared it to Mean Girls, a friend of mine, and they're like, oh, well, we already had that with Mean Girls. I'm like, no, that happened at the time, so it doesn't count. This is the first one that's actually looked back.
Yeah.
I think it's incredible. Like, it is so good.
That makes me so happy.
It's just, it's great. And like, well, the characters are so rich. Yeah, we'll get it.
Yeah, oh. Yeah.
So
we have the rest of the podcast to just talk about Lady Bird.
Oh, my God. Oh, well,
from here,
I feel like
until I'm dead.
I feel like there's a similar thing happening on my end. You can probably guess what it's going to be about.
Yeah, yeah. And that's fine. I'll talk about it.
It probably rhymes with the last sentence I just made.
Yep. Yeah, I'll be talking about that one, too. Yeah. You guys want to just jump into our tropes?
Let's do it.
Sir, did you know... We talked about this in the beginning of the episode. Listeners will be bored by this, but
yeah,
did you know the tropey is not only based on the word trope, but it's also kind of like it sounds like trophy?
I thought it was a known thing.
Okay. We're just, you and I are on the same page.
Okay, yeah.
These two are like, what?
I have no idea.
I thought it was quite clever.
I try.
Nice.
I try. Kyle.
Yeah.
What's the first trope you're giving out?
The first one I'm giving out is... mine are all gaming themed, just because I feel like we need a little to mix it up a little bit. And my first one is just best level, and it's actually the last chapter in Uncharted: The Lost Legacy, just because it's a ridiculous, over the top level where you're driving in a Jeep and you're chasing a train, and then you jump off the Jeep and you're on the train, and then you are like the train's moving and you are fighting and moving your way up the cars. And then you realize, like, you can't get any further, so you need to jump off the train onto a Jeep that's driving by. But it all happens seamlessly, and there's no cutscene in the middle of it. So it's just, like, the most dynamic and action-packed moment that happened this year. And it was just ridiculous. Uncharted's done similar things. They've had levels in the past that were on train, and they've had levels in the past that were on Jeeps. But they never combined them like this in such a way that was just, like, it was ridiculous. And I replayed that game just recently, and... It was still really incredible. But yeah, that's my favorite level of the year. My first award. Thema, what would be your first award?
It's most lovely extraterrestrial horror film, and that's going to Alien Covenant. Very specified category.
The most lovely?
Yeah, most lovely. And the reason I'm framing it that way is, and we touched about it a little bit, is that it is an alien film through and through. However, with this film and also with Prometheus, something that I'm seeing happening with these movies is that Ridley Scott is trying to address some deep philosophical issues about Genesis, destruction, creation, theology even. And it's set up against this this very much nihilistic backdrop. And... It's actually, to me, kind of evokes memories of things like Westworld, but he's able to do it in 2.5 hours, 2 hours. And it's still, again, it's still true to the franchise. So, is again, not a perfect film by any means, but still, I really enjoyed that experience of having it. It also reminds me of 28 Days Later, where you're having these very surreal meditative moments and then also these very intense moments. I really dig that, and I don't see that a lot.
Yeah
Your opinion of it has actually gotten me to like revisit it and, yeah, like rethink it a lot of different ways, and because it kind of didn't like I liked it, and it didn't like really catch me. It didn't give me much to think about, and until you started talking about it, I was like, oh, yeah. So I'm going to pretty much... some of this is going to be freestyle, because I already know what I'm going to do. However, I will start with the seemingly what would be my first pick, and that's going to be Best Director. And it's going to Jordan Peele. It's going to Jordan Peele for Get Out, and it's going to him a lot because the career turn that he made
is
just incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to like be a first-time director. However, this isn't like a drama actor turned first-time director. This is a guy who was on Mad TV during the like years when nobody watched Mad TV. Yeah. Like, for Jordan Peele to turn around and give us a movie that is so grounded in horror history and like the genre and in like, I mean, beyond the social themes, just what he did for in the genre of horror and the kind of the level of like, just the richness to it. Yeah. It's pretty impressive for a guy who just wrote sketches. And I read this, there's a New York, I think it's New York Times. I'll have to look it up for the end of this episode.
Yeah, it was New York Times. Yeah. If it's the one I sent you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just what it references a sketch that he did on the Key and Peele show. And it was like the first one that I noticed.
Was the sketch Continental?
It was
Continental. Oh, yeah. I saw that video.
What I love about it is it was like the first one that, like, there's been this whole Ari Spears thing about, and Russell Simmons criticizes them and said, for the black community and choosing blah, blah, blah. Here's the thing. Those guys have a level of self-awareness to make fun of themselves, because that character is so deep within black culture, and it's such a poignant and incredible analysis of the kind of guy who would be in that photo. Like, for the listeners, look up Continental Breakfast, and you'll know exactly, and you'll know what I'm talking about.
I didn't realize this is my own naivete. I had no idea that was referencing something within culture.
Yeah,
I thought
referencing the kind of black guy that would be in a photo in 1940, like in that, like, what would you call that kind of photo? It's like a,
well, it's
old boy. Does that work?
Most directly, it's a Shining reference.
Yeah, Shining reference, and yet there's always that guy that's in that photo. And as a black person, you're like, who is this dude? Like, we kind of know who he is. We've seen that character. And what's great about it is Key and Peele had reached a point where they started to really make fun of themselves and how they were viewed in the black community, even like personally.
Mm.
Like, that was such a deep level of comedy and awareness of horror history and The Shining and all kinds of shit.
We're talking
that he's incredible. Jordan Peele's a genius.
We're talking about the sketch where the guy checks into the hotel.
Yes.
He's like, this is a Continental. Ooh.
Yes.
And then is like, oh, take me to Greece.
Okay. He grabs a grape and is like, you're a lovely little plum.
I gotta go deep here. Minstrelsy, and there's this thing called the stump speech, where it's a character, it's a black character, and this goes back to the 1800s, who he gets up there and he's well-dressed, except he's all frumpled, and he mispronounces big words, and he's making this speech. That's a thing from the minstrel shows. It's also a thing in black culture that there are layers of racism, anti-blackness, where light-skinned people and privileged and middle-class black people, there's a whole thing there. Key and Peele are seen by some in our community as those people. He basically showed in that season, in that sketch, that he was aware of it, that he was aware of the different layers, he was aware of how he was perceived. It was a genius move.
Huh.
And he makes a genius comedy, and he made a genius horror movie. Like, that's the thing. That's why he's the best director of the year.
That, and just going back to Get Out, not only is he aware of the tropes of horror, but he also innovates.
Right.
So it's like one of the first things that happened, the first scene, the cold open, he's like, the guy says, I'm not going that way.
Right.
I'm turning around.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, that's exactly what I would do if I felt like I was being stalked. Like, and that, yeah.
Yeah, so that's best director. Nick, what is your number five?
The first trophy, I'm going to do supporting actor. So I do have some honorable mentions. Lakeith Stanfield from Get Out is an honorable mention. Woody Harrelson in Three Billboards. People are talking more about Sam Rockwell's performance, but I think Woody Harrelson's actually the best supporting performance in that movie. Jason Mitchell as Ron Sell in Mudbound. And Adam Driver in The Last Jedi, I thought it is just amazing.
Oh, loved him, yeah.
But my supporting actor award is going to go to Adam Sandler in The Meyerowitz Stories, which is a Netflix original movie. And I think every, like, 15 years or something like that, Adam Sandler just gives us a performance where you're like, why don't you just always do this? It's similar in a lot of ways to his Punch Drunk Love character. He's a little bit higher functioning, I think, socially than that character. But it's somebody who, you know, has layers of anger, especially towards his family, especially his father, Dustin Hoffman. But he also, like, cares about his family, and you get to see all these different, you know, it's a troubled, complicated, recently divorced guy. And he shows all these layers so well in the way that Adam Sandler does when he's doing something good, which happens, you know, very way too infrequently.
Where do you see that?
It's on Netflix.
Oh.
Yeah. I just thought he's great in this movie. He's funny in it, but he's also, like, really heartbreaking. And yeah, it's a great performance. Adam Sandler.
It makes me wonder. So Adam Sandler, he had, like, a contract with Netflix, right? And he did, like, a bunch of movies with them. I wonder if this is in the same contract that Crazy...
Yeah, like, Crazy he gets Eight to do.
Was in. I don't think it is, because it was made by Noah Baumbach, who's actually Greta Gerwig, the director of Lady Bird. They're dating. I think he directed it, and this is just, like, where the contract landed after it was made. I'm not positive.
Because I knew a lot of those movies were really awful, but I this one sounds like it's not.
The Cobbler, yeah, it sounds like they finally distilled it.
Yeah, and, like, the dude's so rich, I don't know why he keeps doing crap movies. Like, does he just not know? Like, he's always trying to just do, like, whatever the script calls for, and he only signs up for a good script one out of every 15 movies? Or I don't know, but he's so good in this movie.
I'd like to believe it was Ridiculous 7, right? I think you said Hateful Eight.
Oh, yeah. I knew it was one of those numbered.
Ridiculous 6.
Is it 6?
Is it Ridiculous 6?
I don't know how many.
Maybe it is.
I don't know how many there were. Ridiculous 6
rolls off the tongue. There's an adjective and a number.
Yeah.
But I'd like to think that it's probably, number one, not as fun than being around your friends and, like, goofing off or, you know.
I guess that's true.
And getting paid to. But, I'd like to think that he just gets so worn out by it, because he does. At least with Punch, I didn't see this one clearly, but Punch Drunk Love, like, I could see, like, going home after that and being, like, spent, right?
Yeah. I could see that with this movie, too.
Yeah.
For sure. Kyle, what's your next award?
My next award is game with the best atmosphere, or most atmospheric game, and it goes to Resident Evil 7, which was a huge surprise for me personally, just because I didn't know how it would go, changing the game from being a third person to first person, but really being in the head of the character, the main character, adds a lot to just how creepy the game is, and the whole, like, a majority of the game takes place just in one house, but just walking down a hallway, similar to something like PT, where you don't really know what to expect, and it's just a combination of amazing graphics and sound design, and just terrifying characters that make you just uneasy pretty much the entire time you're playing this game, and it's really good, and so I liked it a lot. I know I talked about it a little bit earlier in the year, because it came out, I think, like, in January or something, but yeah, that game, I don't think, was talked about enough when it comes to best games of the year, but it was definitely up there, probably top five for me. But yeah, definitely most atmospheric. Resident Evil 7. Thema, would be your next award.
Best creepy moments, and we have a tie both in Get Out. The first being, there's a moment when there's a moment when the protagonist goes upstairs, and everyone at the party who was, like, engaged in conversation just stops abruptly and looks up.
Oh, yeah.
So creepy. And the second part being around the same time would be the silent auction scene, which was just so... Both of those scenes, as is the movie, of course, social commentary, but even just on the surface of matters, real menacing and real unsettling to the core.
And nothing is said in either of those scenes. It's just like...
Yeah, that's silent. Part of it, right?
Yeah, they're silent. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's creepy.
And we talked more about at least the auction scene on the Get Out episode. So if you haven't listened to it, go back and check it out.
Self-plug. Real good.
Yeah, self-plug.
Definitely.
Sir, you're number four.
So runner-up award for best documentary goes to Whose Streets. And basically the best documentary of the year is Whose Streets. However, it's kind of run-up award because of another thing. And that's directed by Saba Folian. It's about the Ferguson uprisings. Just watch it, 2017. Just find it somehow. Whose Streets? It's great. It's incredible. Best docudrama award goes to Get Out, directed by Jordan Peele. I just feel like if you want to talk about the psychology of racism and slavery and what it really means for black people to be enslaved, what it means for, you know, the kind of the layers of the effects of slavery, so much of it's in Get Out and so much of it's just perfect. I mean, it has more references to white racism, like overt white racism, than like the GOP convention. Like, it's like the most incredible analysis that we've had so far of what's happened to us in this country psychologically. And yeah, best docudrama. Nick, what is your number four award?
This is just going to get really obnoxious. my next award is for supporting actress. So runners-up, Rooney Mara had two great roles this year in Song to Song and A Ghost Story, where she eats an entire pie in almost one.
That got so many walkouts. And so many people came back to see that movie. Like, it was the most incredible experience ever. Like, having that
she
movie
eats
play.
A whole pie at once. It's awesome.
Does she include the crust in that?
She doesn't. And Nelly was pretty close.
People are walking out because she eats pie?
Yeah.
It's a really slow...
Basically, we had two people walked out, essentially. Yeah. A couple and then one person. And they were like, what's going on in there? And then you had people showing up, like,
again and again.
Three, four times.
I bought it. It's
insane.
It's a really good... Awesome. It's a really good movie, but I can see...
It sounds incredibly slow.
If slow movies aren't your cup of tea, I can see not making it very far into this movie. There's not a lot of like words or things that happen in it. Mm-hmm. So if those are important to you, you know, you may not. Anyways, I thought she was great in it. Tiffany Haddish, we talked about her in the funniest scenes episode, but hilarious in Girls Trip. Michelle Pfeiffer in Mother is amazing. Two of the supporting leads. Or supporting characters, Beanie Feldstein and Laurie Metcalf, who play the friend and mother in Lady Bird, are both amazing. But my supporting actress award is going to go to, and you're not going to hear about her. She didn't get a Golden Globe nomination. She's not going to get anything for the Oscars or any of these other things. But Betty Gabriel's Georgina in Get Out.
Oh, yeah.
She's
man,
very small part. And it's one of these supporting performances where it's a small role. You don't know a lot about them.
How many lines do you think she has in the entire movie?
Yeah. I don't know, but she's got the best. She's got the creepiest line.
The best line in the movie
is when he's like, "All I know is sometimes when there's too many white people around, I get nervous." And
no.
It's so unsettling.
Yeah, like your heart's just like, yeah. Wow.
That yeah.
She like,
yeah.
She has maybe a couple minutes worth of lines throughout the whole movie, but what character the entire year is on has that short amount of time to work and is that memorable? I don't think
has that kind of effect on the audience.
Yes,
like accomplishes that much.
Yeah,
the layers that she delivered that one line are. I'm glad she got on the list because that is very noteworthy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that like that performance, that character, are really one of those things where I think, you know, like 20 years from now when we're looking back at like all time great horror movie scenes, we'll talk about, you know, lines from Psycho and you know, the key scenes in The Exorcist and The Omen and things like that. But I think this one's gonna stand the test of time because it's just so like it just gives you chills.
And again, spoilers. It's like someone, not to give away what's going on, but like what's going on under the surface is trying to emerge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like she's playing.
Yeah. She again, like spoiler wise, like she transforms in that like one little moment.
And she starts crying in that scene.
Well, that's because that's what I mean. Like there's, it's like she's playing two characters at once, mm-hmm. the person on the surface and the person trying to convey a message.
Yeah.
Lakeith
Stanfield, to his credit, he didn't win my best supporting actor, but he's an honorable mention.
Yeah, for similar things that he did.
That was another moment. So right. Yeah. He's so impactful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was only in it for...
Yeah. I think part of the reason he didn't get that award for me, which I'm sure I'll be pretty upset about. but I'm just so used to him being amazing from the few things I've seen him in already. Like in Short Term 12, he's incredible, and in Atlanta,
Crown Heights came out this last year, and he was great in that. Yeah. I mean, it's a movie that is it didn't do a lot of damage, you know.
Yeah.
However, his performance in it is just awesome.
Yeah, he's amazing. I love him. Kyle.
My next award goes to Best Indie Game, and it goes to What Remains of Edith Finch by The Giant Sparrow. I think I talked about this a few episodes ago. It kind of belongs to this weird genre called Walking Simulator, but that's a really awful way to describe what this game is.
A walking simulator.
Oh.
Wow.
I'm not even going to...
Sometimes when I'm driving.
What would you do What would you do in a walk-in simulator?
Read the script.
Yeah.
Do what you can.
Wow.
that must have been out of mind. What am I doing?
No, I think yours is it.
But what I like about this...
Hold on.
Yeah, wait. I'm not done with this either.
Have you guys seen the SNL...
The sketch. Family reunion?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amy Poehler, that is saying something about, my dolly.
She doesn't like ghosts. Ghosts are spooky.
What?
I can check this out.
Anyways, Kyle, continue. It's a walk-in simulator.
What I like about this game, especially compared to something like Gone Home, which I did not like, is that it's way more of, you play more of it. It's not just reading diaries and stuff. Because you're going throughout this house and opening these journals, but when you open them, you get transported in, this mini, episode of playing through this really tragic, cursed family's life. And all of the cutscenes you play as end horribly, and it's but it's both magical and beautiful at the same time, and it's fully voice acted, so you don't have to read every single thing like in Gone Home, which kind of bothered me. And it was really good. It's a short game, which is why I kind of separated it from my Game of the Year, because I feel like this game just can't sort of compete with games that you play for a lot longer that have way more of a budget behind them. But What Remains of Edith Finch was a game that I find myself thinking about more and more when I look back at the games that I played this year. And what's cool is that I thought it was originally just going to be on PlayStation 4, but over the summer it came out for Xbox One too, so most people can play it now, which is cool.
I might have to go home and buy it, because you've brought it up before when I was I love Gone Home, and you're like...
Yeah, well, I think I'm definitely in a weird place for not liking it, definitely in the minority for that, but... But yeah, I liked it a lot more. I think what it probably does compared to Gone Home is it doesn't leave it up to your imagination, because it's telling you a story as opposed to letting you figure it out on your own. I still really like this game a lot. What would be your next award, Thema?
I'm going to say favorite battle scene, and this goes to Wonder Woman, the beach raid. You have all these Amazons working with sword, shield, bow and arrow, spears, fighting against World War I Germans. And it was just so beautifully shot and choreographed. Honestly, I've watched the movie twice, and tears came to my eyes during a moment in each time, and I don't know why. But there was this time where this woman jumps up over some of the baddies and fires a bow and arrow. And it was just so... It was the first time in a very long time where I'm like, oh, wow, they captured the essence of this comic book and brought it to life right there. And it wasn't even Wonder Woman doing it, but it was just they captured the Amazons from the DC universe that I've been reading, and it struck like this significant chord with me. I don't, you know, yeah, it was just beautiful. And there's also something to be said, I think, especially in 2017, for having a beach full of women overtake a bunch of men who are attacking them.
Why happened in 2017? Yeah.
but that whole the whole notion of we have strong women who women are strong, period, and are every bit as viable when, especially, I don't know, just not just the climate, but also in the larger scheme of DC movies, where you have you only have one woman on the Justice League, for example. But she's every bit as powerful and more powerful than most of the other guys. It's, yeah, it was just, I don't know, that scene, that movie and that scene especially, really got me in the feels. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially also, not just like she's every bit as powerful as you say, but even outside of the plot of the movie itself, from like a critical and box office perspective. Like,
yeah.
Didn't they re-edit Justice League like crazy to get more of her in? I know they did. I didn't see Justice League, but I know at least for like the trailers and the posters, they're like, we need to feature Gal Gadot a lot more because people don't care about like Ben Affleck and Henry Cavill.
And
Henry Cavill's CGI'd mustache.
Yeah, that was weird. Oh, man. That was really...
That's one of my favorite things from this year is that they had to CGI that dude's mustache.
That was weird. And then, yeah, I mean, I'm sure they did... but I'll say that I think the reason why Wonder Woman succeeded is that Wonder Woman as a character has succeeded for decades, and that movie was true to her, as opposed to
Batman or Superman,
yeah. Which those characters are not true to the comic book characters. So, yeah.
So yet another thing that Thema is getting me to, like, I didn't watch this one, so this won't be a rewatch like Alien.
Yeah,
I'm gonna watch this movie only because of what Thema just said.
Oh
no, I liked
it too. Real talk.
I liked it too, but I was watching it, and about halfway through, I texted Thema. I'm like, I don't get the hype. And then about 10 minutes later, some more action starts going on, and I text her. I'm like, yeah, I get it now. Like, it's piqued my interest.
So is this number three?
Yeah.
So my runner-up award for best new musical act goes to Tank and the Bangas. It's Bangas. They're out of New Orleans. They're incredible. It's like a kind of like Outkast was when they first started. It reminds me of that sort of music. Like, they're just great. And that's just watch the NPR Tiny Desk of Tank and the Bangas. They were the NPR Tiny Desk winners.
I didn't know that they had winners.
Yeah, they have this thing the past 3 years where they like
That's cool.
have people submit, and out of like 6,000 people or something, these women won, and they're just awesome. I can't wait to hear more. Runner up for my actual award for best musical performance goes to "It Ain't Fair," also on NPR's Tiny Desk. It Ain't Fair by The Roots and Bilal.
I watched that whole video when you posted it. It's so good.
My God, there's been a couple things like. That, you know, ever since 2014 that, like, I've seen that have summed up the entire past 3 years, 4 years emotionally for me. And one of them was Who Streets, and the other one was that performance of that song. Black Thought is probably the greatest living MC, like, we have. The greatest living rapper, technically. And as what he means as an MC, like what an MC really is, a griot, a person who speaks about the black community, speaks for us, like that's Black Thought. And to see what's happened for him in The Roots and Questlove has just been great. And that performance was like the summation of their entire career. And it just, everything came together perfectly. And Bilal, who was this guy who was kind of unknown back in the 2000s, he's kind of a guy who's worked with Jay Dilla, he's worked with Erykah Badu, Common, for years it's just a singer and just a guy who was random, you know, it's kind of an unknown R&B guy. He really came into his own on that. It was like he channeled Prince and all these other, it was just incredible. And also my actual award for best performance, the best performance musically of 2017 would be Michael Abels and the incredible song from Get Out. Mm-hmm. I'm going to butcher this.
Oh, is it the...
That's just so
the creepy.
So,
that creepy... Yeah, when you, yeah, did you have it? Do you have it translated too?
Yeah, yeah, I forget what it translates
like, listen to. Listen to the words of the elders or something like that.
Something real creepy.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, so it's, I'm gonna fuck this up. Sikilizia kwa wahenga, a Swahili phrase that translates to "listen to your ancestors," and it's basically, there's so many layers of black music in this song. Mm. Like, it's, and I love when somebody sets out to do something and they totally succeed. Like, he wanted to channel, like, the blues and gospel and shout from the slave era and, like, these Negro spirituals and all this stuff. And, of course, like, West African music. And he channels it all into this thing that we haven't heard. And the best thing I heard about it, he's like, most of black music is, like, triumphant and it's supposed to be kind of almost medicinal. And so it's like encouraging,
yeah,
even in its lowest points. This is the exact opposite.
Yeah.
And that makes it the best horror score that we've heard in so many years, because it's so effective as like the subversion of, gospel, of like an gospel. Entire culture's music. I can't speak enough about how great it is. So,
and an honorable mention goes to that creepy Run Something Run and that was playing in the car when it pulls over. Yeah. That song is also super creepy.
All right, Nick, what's your three word?
Should I do actor or actress first? What do you guys want?
Actor.
All right, actor. I'm going to switch mine around a little bit, just because.
Yeah.
Anyways, some honorable mentions. Robert Pattinson in this movie called Good Time is so... It should be called Great Time.
Same time I've heard about it, yeah.
Yeah, he's amazing in it. Like, I completely forgot, and actually... Nelly said it afterwards, and I was like, is he British? I didn't know. He basically plays, as she described it, Jesse from Breaking Bad.
Jesse!
Bitch!
Magnets, bitch!
Anyways, he's incredible in this movie. Kumail Nanjiani in The Big Sick.
Oh, I
just love him in that movie.
So good.
Have you guys heard of this movie called Brawl in Cell Block 99?
Yeah, I saw it.
I've heard of it.
Do you like it? It was by the guy who made Bone Tomahawk, which I haven't seen, but I know you were a huge fan of.
That's on Amazon Prime. It's on my list.
Yeah.
I mean, Bone Tomahawk still stands as one of my favorite westerns.
On Amazon Prime.
It's probably my favorite western recently.
Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I thought it wasn't as good as Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah, but it's enjoyable.
It was a thing.
Yeah.
And it was its own.
It's enjoyable.
It has its own universe, and it's
It's a rough sit. Like, that's
it's a rough movie to watch. That's also why it kind of like it made me feel like I was getting old.
After I saw that, I was like, oh, I really want to watch Bone Tomahawk, but like not right now.
It's not as bad as
as
Brawl,
because he does some violent stuff in this movie. Mm. Anyways, he is Vince Vaughn of Swingers fame. I thought he was great in it.
That's awesome. I just love that Vince Vaughn's getting... This is his first award for Best Actor.
Yeah, since Swingers. No. He's not my award. He's not my award. No, he's not a award. No.
So close.
I kept going back and forth as to whether or not I was going to give this award to Daniel Kaluuya from Get Out, because I think like this movie is... It really relies on him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And his performance is just so good in this movie, but I don't know, we've talked about Get a little bit in today's episode, so the tiebreaker is going to be that, and I'm giving it to John Cho in this movie called Columbus. Did you see that?
Yes.
Because I know that they were screening it at the Nightlight.
Yeah, me and the other show leader like brought it to the Nightlight, like requested it, and God, wow.
So this movie, I'm going to talk about it a little bit more in part two. I think this is going to be the last segment in this episode, and then we'll cut it and we'll give out some more awards in part two. But anyways, this movie, it was directed by a first-time director who goes by the name of Kogonada, one word. Nobody knows what his actual name is. Basically, he was like a film student, like PhD student, who decided that he didn't want to be an academic anymore, quit, and then ended up making this movie. The other thing he used to do is make video essays, like online. Not, they might be on YouTube, I'm not sure, but just short films about movie criticism. Like, he did one of my favorite, maybe my favorite video essay is called What is Neorealism? And basically there was a neorealist movie called Terminal Station that was directed by the guy who made Bicycle Thieves. And then they recut it for David O. Selznick recut it in America, retitled it and everything. And it just compares the two side by side for about 5 minutes, and it shows, like, this is what that director wanted, and this is why, how neorealism is different than, you know, a classical Hollywood type film.
Well,
so
since this is the last segment, I'm gonna I feel like Columbus was incredible.
Yeah,
like it's like a patch of blue. Like, it's one of the best relationships I've seen on screen in years.
Yeah,
like it's just awesome to see. So, and the actors, oh my god, everybody steps up. And you're right though that, like, John Cho,
he's fantastic.
Just, yeah, this is a career defining performance. Yeah, like, he's, I want to see him in so much stuff now. Like, I just want to see more John Cho. Like, and I've always felt like that. So for me to be like, yeah, that's the thing. Now I'm just like, wow, this guy's even better than I think we realize.
Yeah. So what I take away from that video about neorealism is, what the neorealists do is they would allow people, like, they would show people walking further, or people would leave a scene and then they just show the people in the background, like, dealing with that empty space now. And so much of this movie is about that empty space. Like, these two characters talk, and basically it's John Cho is a Korean translator who's in town because his father's fallen ill, and he meets this girl who his dad's like an architect academic type, and he meets some girl who works in a library, and she works in a library or a bookstore, but she's not going to school. She doesn't really want to leave because she has her own, like, personal issues, and it's just about the two of them, like, becoming friends. It's a little bit like the Before Sunrise and Before Sunset movies, where it's just a couple characters talking and getting to know each other. Not a lot really happens, but it's a lot about just art. But what he does that I like so much is he allows that space, like, he allows the space in between sentences, in between people's reactions, to just exist. So they have this conversation, you know, just standing outside of her car, and there's these really long pauses in between each question that they're asking each other. And I just think that's such an interesting way to, like, frame this relationship between these two people. When I first started watching this movie, about 5 minutes in, it was like, you know, they're just showing still shots of things, and Parker Posey, and something happens, and then it's like a girl working in a library. And for whatever reason, I was immediately just kind of like, I don't like this. Like, there's just something about this style that I'm not into this movie. I'll keep watching it, but I'm just not going to. And then by the time the movie was over, I couldn't have been more wrong. Like,
I had, like, teared up a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
By the time it was right. I was in the same boat where I was underwhelmed. I was interested because there was that early scene with his
something
father.
Happens. Yeah.
And yet, I was,
but I'm watching, like, it. I'm like, I know where this is going. Like, I know what's going to happen, and it just, I don't know. It mesmerized me. So,
I think there's one thing I think bears mentioning, especially considering everything happening in 2017 in Hollywood and culture, and you know, consent and assault, especially older men and power dynamics. This is a movie where a lot of people, based on the trailer, felt like there was, and I think it kind of bears mentioning that there was. Yeah, it's John Cho is like, what, 30 in this?
I don't know how old he is in this, but
as a person, he's like 40.
He's in his mid 40s.
Yeah,
he's double the age of Haley Lou.
And the character is pretty young. And there's this whole thing right now in our culture of, oh, well, this is just normal, and all men are just like this, and da da. While all men are, you know, I'm not a not all men person. While all men are definitely complicit in this culture, I think it's important to point out that it's one of those things where you can't use as an excuse. You can't say that, oh, because back in the 70s, there was a culture that all these guys were, everybody was like that. It's not that way. I love this movie because John Cho has the most respectful, older, like, it's a movie about mentorship in such a cool way. And I'm spoiling it.
A little bit, feel like. Without getting too much into it, I
just think it's important to point out that, like, this movie has a lot of layers that it doesn't just, like, declare.
Yeah, I did think about that kind
it's
of
really mature, and it's really cool.
Kind of early on in the movie, I was like, I want to see how old he is. Because, I mean, I'm Asian. I feel like I can say this. You don't always know.
Yeah,
I mean, And I would have lost the bet on him being, I think he's 45. Like, he looks excellent for 45.
Maybe we need, like, a... We've talked about it before.
Yellow don't crack.
These are black. Maybe like gold don't mold.
Gold don't mold. Yellow stays mellow. I don't know. But anyways, so she's in her early 20s, I think. She's really young.
Yeah, and it's, you know.
So I was thinking about that during the movie. I'm like, he's way too old for her. And as much as I like these two characters, do I really want to see them have... And just the way they deal with... The way the movie deals with their relationship is... Like, it couldn't be more perfect.
It's awesome.
And it's also nice to see an Asian character who is just an Asian guy.
Yeah.
He does distinctly Asian, like, he lives in Korea, and he's a Korean translator. He has a distinctly Asian job while not being in any way a stereotype.
Oh, my God, right? And I love how the things that are Asian about him directly subvert in such a natural and cool way. Just, you know, he's just this American guy.
Yeah,
he talks about things in
the Korean culture that he's like, I don't believe in it.
Yeah,
that shit.
It's just so great.
Yeah, and then one last thing, just about this movie is after I was done watching it, I was like, I think I like that. And as more time has gone on, it's crept up and higher on my best of the year list. I think the most complimentary thing I could say about this movie. Is if I ever make a movie, I want it to be like this movie. I just love the fuck out of this movie. I really do. It's one, like 5 years from now, I may regret having this not be my number one movie of the year. I don't know. I've only seen it once.
I mean, we've got to record part two.
Yeah. No, I still have an effort number one.
Yeah.
But I just, it's a great movie.
It's really good.
Are you gonna cry?
No, I'm not.
should we take a break? And
I will not cry.
It was real. It was real.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Columbus, check it out. Not based on Columbus, Ohio.
I didn't realize that when we booked it. Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, what is this? Surprised. Columbus, Indiana. What the fuck?
Is it really?
Yeah.
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 Boo. So close. Yeah. So close to the mark.
And yet.
So far
away. All right, that's part one. Join us next week. We're going to be talking more tropies 2017. I'm not going to cry. Woo!
I make no promises.
Yeah, we will. We will probably talk about Get Out and Lady Bird and Columbus more.
Awesome.
Yep. Anyways, I've been Nick.
I've been Sir
Thumbo
and Kyle.
And you know where to find us. See us next week.
Yay!
Bye.